accession number 31446, which is Dennis Vision Real 5. Now, we talked about what you did on the ship. Now, what did the ship do? You see, where did you go? What happened?
The ship left Chatham Dockyard in October 1948. The first stop was Gibraltar. And as I'd never really been abroad as such, this was a novelty, because we did go ashore in Gibraltar.
Oh, tell us about that then.
We went to, obviously went to various bars to see what they were like and sampled the goods inside. Saw the Barbary apes, which are really monkeys, but everyone calls them Barbary apes, and if you've got anything in your hand, they'll pinch it as quick as anything. After Gibraltar, we went to Malta, where we were moored at the buoy in Valletta Harbour, just below Custom House, just by Custom House steps. When we went ashore, we couldn't go to the steps, that was officers only. We used to go to just to the jetty, and that was it. Or you could get a Daiso to take you, which is a boat where the Maltese fella who rows the boat, it's one oar, and he stands up and pushes on the oar, something like a gondolier. And they're very, very highly decorated boats. You know, only small, take about four people, and that was it. And obviously they charge you for taking you ashore.
So tell me about what Malta, what would you do ashore at Malta?
Ashore in Malta, there wasn't a lot to do. You could go to the pictures. You had a skating rink, a roller skating rink, up in Spinola, which we used to go to quite frequently, because they also had a bar there, and we got well known up there. And I actually got really friendly with an army chap and his family. So that was one place. But what we used to do, when we had all night leave, you had to be back on board 8 o'clock in the morning. We used to stop in teeny barracks, the army base, to sleep. So where, if you had a soldier out, gone home to his wife or whatever, we'd use his bed or his bunk. And then they'd give us a shake in the morning and get us back to the ship on time. But other than that, it was bars, restaurants, obviously beer wasn't all that dear. It was about fourpence old money a bottle. There used to be mainly Blue Label and Anchor, which was a light ale. And obviously you'd get spirits and things like that, which we very seldom touched that. We just stayed on beer.
Would you get drunk or?
You got tipsy. You didn't actually get drunk, because if you went back on board, you'd be on a charge. You'd be, or as we used to term it, in a rattle. So you was always capable of walking on, because having to go on the boat as well and then going on board. That was it for Malta, because we went back there so many times. I did do the Marines assault course there, which was quite enjoyable. I was only about 19, 20 at the time.
Tell me about it.
I was all for it, because it was, the normal sort, climbing up ropes and into damaged buildings and having to jump over walls. And in the buildings, there's one particular one I remember, that as you jumped off the wall, as you were to where you had to jump and land, you had to sort of twist your body in here so you come round facing the other way. And if you didn't do that, you went all the way down. And plenty of rifle firing. We had colour sergeants from the Marines taking us. So there was Bren guns and everything else we did used on there, which is not usual for Navy to use that type of thing. So the only thing I didn't like about was cleaning them afterwards. That's because all the oiling and greasing and stripping down, you know, it took us quite a long while to learn how to do it. That was about 2 weeks, I think, we had there. And then Hydrophia, I think that's how you pronounce it, we had a rest camp. And I think I'd been out there roughly about 2 years before I got there. It was just a camp, like a barracks, but you could come and go as you pleased.
So what was that like? Well, might as well do it while you mentioned it.
There was nothing there. It was just a place you could get away from the ship. The only thing you could get there was, you know, you still got your top. You still got your rum. And if you were out for the day when it was, they saved it for you, and you got two the following day. So that was quite nice. But other than that, Salima was a bit of a posher place. That was where the small boats were, submarines and motor MTBs used to go. There was a couple of bars. The Klondike was one, where they used to put on entertainment. It was chaps doing turns, juggling acts, conjuring, that special dancing, because a lot of them, these people out there, were homosexual. And it was, but they were fantastic blokes, you know. Other than that, Malta was pretty general. You could get a good meal. Plenty of cafes, so you get your steak or your gammons and chips and various other things. You never seemed to get a roast. It was always steak or gammons and chips. Our ship, the Phoebe, we sort of commandeered one bar, the Sportsman, and we got well known down there. That was in Straight Street, and it was just a little turning off of Straight Street, which was commonly known in the Navy as the Gut, because it was it wasn't a very pleasant place, really. But other than that, you had weird and wonderful name clubs. There's the Bing Crosby Bar and things like that, you know. But generally, I enjoyed it there. You had a naval tailors there, so you could always get your suit, get measured up for a new suit. Greenberg's their name were. They were right at the top of Straight Street.
Can you tell us a bit about Tiddly Suits as a company?
Tiddly Suits, yeah. When you join up, you're issued with a blue suit. And it might fit you, it might not. So, and that's called your number threes. But your number one suit was your best suit. And then you had gold badges on that, whereas suppose your number threes, you had red badges. So it was made specially for you. Now, most jumpers finished where the silk went round your neck and your bow, tied your bow and your lanyard. That used to come down to a sharp V. Well, Tiddly Suit, if possible, if you could get away with it on board ship, you used to have it made a U shape. So it shows a bit more of your jumper. Underneath, what do you call it? My shirt, if you like, underneath my jumper, and you see more of it, and it made you look good. Trousers, you had an enormous pair of bell bottoms. I mean, I think the widest I had was 34s. So it's, but others used to have 36s, you wanted them to flap as you walked. And if you stood there, you couldn't see your shoes. And also, you used to put creases in your trousers. Now, I don't know what it's like now, but creases on my uniform, you didn't have like the army a front crease. You had a crease on the side of your leg that went inwards. So the sharp piece was inside, and you had a U-shaped bit outside. Well, then, because you always folded your trousers inside out, so that crease was... But then you fold it so you could put creases across the width of your trousers, but you had six of them. Then the top of your jumper made it seven, because seven creases for the seven seas. But... There was a way of folding everything. Your sleeves on your jumper, the creases went inside. So it was a V shape. You had nothing pointing out. It was all inwards. But other than that, obviously, you tried to get away not wearing the lanyard, because the lanyard used to make you look a bit stupid. Because when you went on leave... another thing was your hat. I mean, the things that Matlows used to keep in their hats was amazing. but you're supposed to wear it an inch above your eyebrows. Well, most Matlows then, as soon as they got off the ship, their hat went on the back of their head, and they were Jack me lad, and you had your tiddly suit on, and that was it. But if it's gold badges, as opposed to red ones, and a really good fitting suit. And that was it. That was a silly suit.
Now, what were you doing at Valletta as a ship? I mean, were you part of a squadron or part of the Mediterranean
fleet? No, we were just part of the Mediterranean fleet. We'd go out regularly on exercises.
And what were the exercises like?
Exercises could be good, could be bad. One bad one we went on, we was... out with a Liverpool, which had Lord Mountbatten on board, and we were exchanging supplies ship to ship, so which is always a bit dangerous, because you've got wires slung from one ship to the other, and you've got to keep a reasonable gap within the two ships, so otherwise you get collisions. And this particular day, the cable parted. So, and when they do part, they really, it's like cracking a whip. They really do whip. And the block on the cable, which is transferring, came back towards the Phoebe. And it hit, it was a patrolman, like a naval policeman, who was standing on the upper deck watching things. And it hit him, fractured his skull. But all we got from the Liverpool and from Mountbatten, never mind him, carry on with the exercise. And that was it. So we've got the poor so-and-so laying there with a fractured skull, told to ignore him. But that was the worst thing. Another time, again with the Liverpool, she hit us and took away our laundry, which was on the starboard side. No, port side. It was on the port. We used to carry a Maltese chap who says, if you wanted him to do your laundry, take it in, he'd do it all. And he'd keep the ship tidy around where you got rid of all your rubbish, your gash, where it went over the side and things like that. But as luck would have it, he wasn't there. But their anchor caught our laundry and took it away. Another bad one was, these have not all happened week after week. These are spread over my period in the Mediterranean of 2.5 years. Another one, we were just off Greece, and the Gambia hit us. And that was a really bad one, because it knocked the propeller shaft out of line. so we could only then work on one propeller. So then we had a glorious cock up, if you like, because it was we went back to Malta, and obviously we couldn't do too much, so we stayed. We went into dry dock, and they sent out a new propeller shaft from England. But the problem there was, what no one had taken into account, was the ship being in dry dock, the propeller shaft is about 30 foot long, or the dry dock wasn't long enough to withdraw the old one or put the new one in. So we had to leave it. So we was, after that, we just motored around on one engine, the propeller shaft. But that was in ship's exercises and things like that. Another exercise we had to fire torpedoes, and it was a bit rough. The weather was a bit rough, and we went away. We fired it. As far as we were concerned, everything. But then all of a sudden, we got a signal from another ship. I mean, I didn't get a signal. We got it on the skipper. Got it on the bridge. How long have you been firing porpoise from your tubes? And what had happened was that the horizontal rudders on the torpedo are jammed in the up position. So consequently, it's bringing it up. So it's bringing it out the water. Then the weight of it is taking it back down again. So it's going along, jumping out the water, in, jumping out. And it had to go on like that till it ran out of fuel. So it was, that was a funny one. Another one with torpedoes. We fired a torpedo, and it was pretty rough. It was rough, and we went away to collect it. They bob up and down, obviously, and being a bit rougher, it was bobbing a little bit more. And the coxswain to go alongside it misjudged, and the torpedo came up through the bottom of the whaler. So I can say I torpedoed myself. But we still hooked on, and because with a whaler they'll fill up but they don't sink, they go to sort of gunwale level in the water and then they just lay there. And so we did get it. I mean, they brought the ship up to us then, but it got the torpedo back on board no problem. But it was rough weather. Then another time. Lord Mountbatten transferred his flag to the Phoebe, and we did fire Tim Fish while he was on there.
Now, what was he like?
Never really had anything to do with him. No, hardly ever saw him. But he was very strict. We fired these torpedoes. One torpedo. When it was really rough, and we had a hell of a job getting it back. Well, we couldn't get back to the ship with the rowing. They had to bring the ship to us again, and we got it back. And he did recommend, give us a pat on the back for doing the job in such rough weather. But that was the only thing. And then they, because he was on board and was going to stay on board for a while, they removed both sets of torpedo tubes. Because we had a triple either side of the ship, one to keep his launch and the other one for his car. So my torpedo job disappeared, and I had to go. I just worked sort of ASDICs and part of ship, general work. But other than that, that was it. But places we visited when, you know, to show the flag.
Tell me about that. So showing the flag tour, tell us about that. What was it like showing the flag?
Well, you went in to various countries. You always open for visitors, so people could come on board and have a look around, mainly dignitaries. You know, you didn't get many of the ordinary bloke off the street come and have a look. But we went to quite a lot of places. I mean, we went offhand without even looking at anything. I remember we went to the south of France, to Nice, Monte Carlo. We went to Italy, to Bari, Naples, Capri, Trieste, Marshalot, Turkey, Kos, which is the island in Greece, Athens, Port Said, Alexandria, Sfax, which is a little place in Africa, which was very, very nice. Cyprus went quite a few times. That was to Famagusta, Kyrenia, and Limassol. And while in Alexandria, I had the opportunity, we were there for a few days, so someone got up a party to go to Cairo, and I think it cost us £1.50 from Cairo on the train to from Alexandria to Cairo, and I, as a lack of it, I could afford it, just. And there was four of us who stuck together there, and we went, and they put us up in a hotel, Luna Park Hotel. I always remember it, because you had all the chaps walking around in their fezzes and their long white shirt robes, as well, the waiters, and they came round to serve us while we were waiting for our meal. And if I was talking to the chap next door, they just kept, they didn't just put a ladleful or a spoonful on you, they just kept going until you turned round and told them to stop. And if you were talking, you suddenly found you had a pile of food on a plate, and you're like, how am I going to eat this? We went to the pyramids. I went inside the pyramid, which was an unusual thing for around about £49.50 for. But the thing was, if you went out there, you either went out on a donkey and came back on a camel, or because they didn't have enough camels, or so for everyone. But I've ridden on a camel since. I've been back with a wife since then, and but they're such horrible things to ride, because not like a horse where you have the left leg go and one right leg go. Camel, both legs on one side go forward together. So I think that is why they call them ships of the desert, because they roll so much. And the so-and-so thing that I was on would walk right on the edge of the sand dune. And when you get to the top of one, it's a long way down. And you keep looking over and say, bloody hell, am I going to fall off? But it was enjoyable. I mean, I've never seen anything like it before in my life. I mean, the farthest I'd ever been for a holiday was a week at Folkestone as a kid. Other than that, all my holidays were hop picking in Kent. But other than that, and all these places I've mentioned, we went there 2, 3, 4 times. So you've got to know. I mean, Cyprus, in Famagusta, we used to put out a shore patrol. Well, if you were duty watch, you didn't have to be naval police to do that. You just got detailed.
So tell me about shore patrol duty.
Yeah, shore patrol duty. Your duty watch on board, and they usually pick out. There used to be 2 or 4 of you, you know, so you split up. And you wore your white belt, white gaiters, and you go ashore, and you pick up a local policeman, and he'd take you round. And that, I found that very enjoyable in Cyprus, because all these policemen used to take you round to different bars. You used to walk in the back door, and you'd get a drink and a bowl of grapes and nuts, and you sit there and have a drink, and then you get on and you go along with another one, and you'd have another drink. And The only thing was you had to be careful how much you drank. I mean, we went in the cinema and you sit up the back and you make sure, and if there are any, no one's causing the disturbance. And you get some, and the policemen are called, and they bring you out coffee. And round the screen, you've got about six different languages, with it being spoken in English. But it was quite enjoyable. But talking to cinemas, as I mentioned before, I was in the cinema the first night they bombed London, and I mentioned the film Destry Rides Again. And the funny thing was, they stopped the film, and we all went home. Now, it's taken over 60 years for me to see the end of that film in 2008 on television. So I never knew the end of it till then. So it's over 60 years to find out what happened in Destry Rides Again with Marlene Dietrich.
Now, anything else happening during this?
No, that was it. It was just going round and round the Mediterranean.
Was it a happy ship then?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about ship morale, you know, the crew morale.
Oh, we were great. We used to play football. Not football, up in... basically anywhere we went, football. Beirut was the only... What's it? You had to have armed guards... Well, say armed guards. You're on with a hose pipe and a whistle to do your... patrol on board ship in case anyone came round to try and use frogmen to blow it up. That was in Beirut in about 49, 50. So, I mean, they're still having trouble, so it's it does go on. But one of the things we were always told to look for was cardboard boxes or boxes floating by the ship, because someone, that might be over someone's head. So in case there was someone underneath that going to fix some explosive to the side of the ship. But if you saw anyone, you just squirted them with your hose pipe, which we had to do in portside with the bum boats, which are the little boats that come around trying to sell your stuff and what's it, to get rid of them. We did have one bloke, don't know how he done it, he got on board ship. There was a quick round up for him, and he was slung in the cells, and that was it. He was there, the police came and got him.
And that was at Portside, was it?
That was, yeah. Yeah, so, but I mean, you had to be, have your wits about you, a lot of places you went to, otherwise you could lose everything. You know, they'll have the clothes off your back.
Now, anything else about your time on the Phoebe?
Phoebe,
you became an able seaman aboard there. Did that make a difference?
Threepence a day, I think it was. I used to get extra pay. And then I also got me, I think I got my good conduct badge on there as well. That's after you've been here 3 years.
You seem to leave the ship in May 51.
Yeah, we arrived home in Chatham in March 51 after spending 2.5 years in the just cruising around the Mediterranean. So, I mean, they were long commissions then. But, I mean, I saw on television just recently about the aircraft carrier. And people are getting homesick and want to go home after 3 months. Well, I mean, this to me is ridiculous. If you signed on to do a stint in the Army, Navy, or if they want to send you away for a year, you go away for a year. You don't start crying after 3 months that you want to go home because you're homesick. It's, we didn't get an option. You went and you stayed there till you come back. It's none of this flying home for a long weekend's leave. It does really annoy me when you get the... I mean, if they're going to get homesick going away, why'd you end up?